is Nightline, May 27, 2011.
Good evening, I'm Terry Moran. 65% of Americans have college debt. Maybe you're one of them. And total student debt in this country at nearly $1 trillion is now greater than total credit card debt. That's partly because more people are going to college, even as college costs skyrocket, having decided that the sacrifice is worth it. But is it really? Tonight we meet a man who made billions in Silicon Valley who says the answer is often no. Here's Lindsay Davis.
You look at a day like this, you'd think anything's possible. Future's limitless.
And you'd probably think so, too, if you were Peter Thiel. He's the Silicon Valley version of the man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. He didn't give you a brain, a heart, or courage, but he had a lot to do with giving you PayPal, Facebook, YouTube, and Yelp. His latest investment, paying students who drop out of college, is surprising for a guy who went to Stanford for undergrad and law school. But maybe it's his own story that's helped lead him to this conclusion. Thiel was a derivatives trader before co-founding PayPal at 31 years old.
So how did you come up with the idea for PayPal?
We were looking at all the new payments companies where people were trying to start on the internet in the 90s. Uh-huh. And we realized that you had to do something with real money, and you had to do something where you could get people involved who weren't signed up yet. And so the main insight was to link money and email together.
To say that combination turned out to be a winning one is an understatement. eBay bought PayPal in 2002 for $1.5 billion, personally earning Thiel $55 million, some of which he used to invest in promising startups, most famously Facebook. His $500,000 investment is now worth $1.5 billion.
Has it exceeded your expectations, the success?
Absolutely.
His status as the company's first Silicon Valley investor earned him the full Hollywood treatment.
Sean, he'll be right with you.
When he was portrayed in the Oscar-winning movie, The Social Network.
Congratulations. We're going to start you off with a $500,000 investment.
When did the light bulb go off for you that this could really be something?
I'd spent a lot of time looking at all the social networking businesses for a few years before then, so I was pretty primed and ready to go. I basically told them I'd invest after meeting them for an hour, so I was ready to go.
More than gut instinct, Thiel is also a genius, literally. As a child, he was a math phenom and chess champion, so don't try this at home.
The only thematic mistake, parenthetically, that you made on general principles is when you moved your knight to the side, mm-hmm. You never want to do that. In general, a knight in the middle can move to lots of squares. On the side, it can move to fewer squares.
Thank you. Now, I'll never do that.
Knight on the rim is dim.
Thiel's known for making eccentric moves.
And if you are doing something genuinely new, it will always look a little bit weird, a little bit strange.
He funds the Seasteading Institute, devoted to creating self-governing communities in the middle of the ocean. And he's also donated millions to promote research into extending human life expectancy by reversing the aging process.
Would you personally want to live for 200 years?
I enjoy my life. I certainly would like to live longer.
So people who know Thiel really weren't all that surprised that his latest project is a little out there.
College is sort of, on the one hand, giving people learning, on the other hand, taking away some future opportunities by loading the next generation down with debt.
He started a $2 million fund to pay promising teens all under the age of 20 $100,000 each to drop out of college and start up a business. Students like Jim Danielson, one of Thiel's fellows, who's pulling the plug on Purdue because he's worried about missing the boat on electric cars.
No engine at all, doesn't use gas at all. It's all electricity.
He started tinkering with his old Porsche in high school and managed to turn it into a fully electric car, something he learned how to do on the internet for free.
And if I passed up this opportunity and waited till I finished my college degree, a lot could be changed.
The critics will say that, well, Peter Thiel, he went to Stanford. He has his law degree from Stanford. Easy for him now to say, well, not everybody has to go to college.
Facebook was started in 2004. That was the right time to start that company. If all the people involved had finished their college education and waited till 2006, 2007, it would have been too late for that business.
His theory is right on time. New York Magazine recently rated the worthlessness of a college degree as one of the year's most fashionable ideas.
The price of education on a college level has gone up by a factor of more than 10 since 1980. Adjusted for inflation, it's gone up by about 300%, more than housing or tech stocks. It's been an incredible, incredible run-up.
But isn't the payout later, isn't it a long-term investment? For example, the typical person who's graduated from college is likely to make two times more over their lifetime than the person who just has a high school diploma.
Doesn't that say something's gone wrong with our society that it's become so critical to get these credentials? And what does it say when anyone with just a high school degree has no prospects in our society?
That kind of thinking has made him the poster boy for the growing movement in Silicon Valley that believes government hinders innovation. But he doesn't hew to the conservative stereotype.
People have often said that you're a walking contradiction in that you're gay, Republican, very religious.
You know, I probably am a bit of an outsider in many ways, and that has good things and bad things about it. It does have the tremendous benefit of forcing you to really think about what's going on with institutions, with our society, and then look for ways to make them better.
Back in our chess game, that intense focus was on full display. Despite a packed schedule, the meticulous billionaire only got excited when it seemed we might not have time to finish our game.
Give me one more minute. Okay. I just need one more minute.
He wants to make sure that
mania here.
Because once Peter Thiel starts something, he's determined not only to finish, but to win.
All right, well, I'm going to go checkmate.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to School Sucks Live. Today is July 5th. Thanks for joining us. If you want to give us a call, the number is 843-JOIN-SSP. With me tonight, Mandrick, how are you doing?
Hey, Brett, how you doing tonight? I'm doing all right, actually.
I'm doing pretty good, too. This is the first time we've ever done this with just the two hosts, just the two of us.
I thought you were going to start singing.
No. Okay, we'll get into this. I'm sure this show will have songs in it. So you spent a lot of time in the last few weeks dealing with this college topic, this college scam. Does it make sense to go to college considering the debt load, considering the fact that most young people are not graduating with any usable skills?
And all the unemployment rates right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that was the thing. Like, there's never any other kind of debt where, like, you don't go into debt for a mortgage. And there's no house, right? But that's kind of the promise of college. So what we wanted to get into tonight was how can we make college alternatives more real? Like, maybe people have been listening to the show and they say, I like the idea of not going to college, but I really don't know what I would do. And I really don't know how I could sell that to a parent. So entrepreneurship, learning a trade, if you're sitting at a high school right now, those things might sound like distant fantasies. You know, like, kids know what entrepreneurship is, but they don't know how to go about doing it.
Yeah, they read about people who did things. Oh, look at Benjamin Franklin. Look at all these things he invented, but it's not really encouraged or...
They don't tell that Benjamin Franklin was doing that stuff too when he was like 12 and 13 because no one was bothering him all day.
Oh, they don't talk about it.
So you are an entrepreneur, and something else that I wanted to talk about tonight.
Are we going
to
talk about me?
Well, yeah, we can talk about the things that you participate in. You're an entrepreneur and you're an agorist.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that you didn't spend a lot of time in the corporate world as well.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 10 years in the corporate world.
So what was it that got you out finally?
Spending 10 years in the corporate world.
I wonder why that happens to so few people, though.
Yeah, I got laid off. I mean, it's kind of the kick in the pants I needed.
Yeah. And had you ever, how old were you when that happened?
This was about a year and a half ago.
Year and a half ago
that I got laid off. But I mean, I'd already started my baklava business, online baklava sales at mandrick.com, that I had already started that in 2009.
And you had been doing that as an agorist,
right? As like side money, just, hey, I'm going to sell this on the internet and keep my money instead of paying taxes on it or whatever,
Sure. Sure.
And also vending at pork, you know, selling food at Porkfest. That was part of the Agris business. Yeah, it still is.
And you said you did really well. I mean, you've been there 3 years now, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just keeps getting better and better every year. We put more and more work into it, and we get a bigger and bigger return. So it's pretty cool.
Now, what was it that, like, I know getting pushed out of the corporate world makes you obviously have to look at other things to do.
Right.
But what was it that got you into this idea that I should do an Agris business? Like, what were your influences at that point?
Well, I mean, my original influence was Free Talk Live.
Yeah.
In 2009. I mean, that was a big reason. I just kind of wanted to do something. You know, I just come to the ideas of volunteerism, and I just wanted to get involved somehow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I've been making baklava forever and people love it. So that kind of got me. I was like, hey, I'll sell this online, see how it goes. And it helped me build a reputation within the Liberty community. So by the time I came to Porkfest, almost a year later, you know, people had heard about it or had ordered from me before and started selling food there. And it was great.
Yeah.
So I just kind of built a reputation up over the years.
And the entrepreneurship thing, obviously you were working for Comcast, so they don't have any kind of like, you can't like go and get, what do they call that? It used to be a big term when I was in education, tuition reimbursements for like courses in entrepreneurship. If you're sitting in a cubicle trying to upsell people on their cable,
I actually wasn't doing that. I was working behind the scenes with the call center.
Yeah. I was thinking that was the kind of job where, because my brother does that. That's his job.
Uh-huh.
And he works in the call center. And one of the things they do is people call in with some kind of issue.
Sure.
And they eventually wind up having a conversation about maybe getting more services.
Yeah, they are always like pushing upsells. I mean, that's all about. I know how the call center was run, and I hate even just thinking about it. Being in that place again. But I mean, when you work in that corporate environment, at least what I've come to find is that the bigger it is, the less appreciated you are as an individual. I mean, they really, you're replaceable. Everybody's replaceable. I've seen high, you know, from the high up on down, everybody, people who have just come and gone, and they're easily replaced.
Yeah.
You're not really valued.
I had an employer actually tell me and a group of teachers that one time, one of the head administrators at this private school said, you guys, I'll have new people here.
Right.
On Monday, if you want.
And they will.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I used to, with the job I had, I would get all the emails from HR showing who was terminated today. And I mean, I had my own Outlook. It had its own rule in Outlook to just go to a certain folder. Because, I mean, people were fired every day. I mean, I'd see 2-3 people, you know, being fired. And then I'd see new hires coming in. And it's just a big deal. And people got this attitude where it's like, oh, they need to keep me around. It's like, they don't need to keep you around. They don't need to keep me around.
You come to think of, you don't, I mean, just from the whole school experience and the college experience, I wouldn't say that people are walking away from all of that and going out into the job market and saying, geez, I'm a valuable person.
Right.
You know, man, I really count. I don't think that's what they're doing, but I think they are to a large extent. And I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I know how I felt. They do expect from habit somebody to kind of take care of you a little bit. You know, the employer offers you benefits. That's how you get your paycheck.
Yeah, we get some good hookups at Comcast for sure.
Comcast, if you are looking to enter the corporate world and you're looking for a benefits package, like saving over $1,000 a year on cable alone.
Right. If you want all those ridiculous channels, sure.
Yeah. Oh, this is not just the ESPN and Nickelodeon. This is like everything that you could think of. I mean, if somebody is looking for that kind of security, and I'll put up some, you know, air quotes in front of security, because it's not going to be there. You know, if you're expecting somebody else to take care of you, that's not the world in which we live anymore. Maybe 20 years ago. So if that's what adults are telling you, you need to think carefully about that advice. 843-JOIN-SSP. This is School Sucks Live. We'll be back in a few. Skype in School Sucks Live. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live for July 5th, 2012. I'm Brett. With me tonight, Mandrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great. This is the first time we've ever done the School Sucks live show with just two hosts. And
you can go home. I can take it from here.
I bet you could. I could imagine you sitting here all by yourself. I have a mouse in each hand, you know, controlling one of the two computers that we have to use. Three cameras on you, just right. Switching them back and forth.
Right.
I think that would be
we have the Osborne and the Brett cams.
Yeah,
pointed
yeah.
at me.
We do have a nice wide shot tonight with a very little simple cam, but the studio looks great. I encourage you to come check us out on schoolsucksproject.com/live. 1-843-JOIN-SSP. We would really like to talk to you tonight, but maybe you're just waiting for us to get into our topic a little bit. Some of the things that I threw together tonight, and I'll put the links in the show notes, I found a pretty impressive list. It's called the College Dropouts Hall of Fame. It's at collegedropoutshalloffame.com. Did you ever hear the show, Mandrick, that I did with that guy, Dale J. Stevens, from the Uncollege Movement?
I don't listen to your show.
This was maybe 30, 35 episodes ago. Dale J. Stevens founded the Uncollege Movement and actually went around toward universities and encourage kids to drop out of college.
That's
I don't
awesome.
Think he was invited everywhere. But he was receiving some funding from this entrepreneur and venture capitalist named Peter Thiel, who is quite a controversial figure.
Right, kind of a big name.
Yes, and has done some interesting and I would say admirable things, but has also done some things recently that have raised some flags. So I just want to preface our Peter Thiel discussion with that. And if you have any thoughts on Peter Thiel or his Founders Fund, one of the things we're going to get into talking about, or the Thiel Fellowship, which is one of his ventures into dealing with the higher education problem, we'd be happy to take your calls on that. But yeah, I was looking at all of these people who started out going to high school or college and said, you know what, this is not for me. I have better things that I want to do with my life. And then I realized that it was like each page was only alphabetical and all those people were just the A's. So it's quite a list.
Yeah, you sent me this link and it's pretty interesting. I want to spend more time on the site.
Some of them I don't, you know, Abigail Adams, like I wouldn't think. And this is not obviously a sexist comment. I wouldn't think a woman, most women, even upper class women, would be expected to attend college in the 1740s or whenever she was college age. Well, we don't live in the 1740s, folks. We live in the 2010s where everyone is expected to go to college. And I actually want to share, we'll start out talking about Peter Thiel with an article that I found on techcrunch.com. It's called "We're in a Bubble and It's Not the Internet, It's Higher Education." And this is written by Sarah Lacey. Sunday, April 10th, 2011. Not a new article, but new to me today. Fair warning, this article will piss off a lot of you.
Probably not a lot of us, though.
Probably not a lot of us, no. It might not even really surprise us. I can say that with confidence, it's because it's about Peter Thiel. And Thiel, the PayPal co-founder, hedge fund manager, and venture capitalist, not only has a special talent for making money, he has a special talent for making people furious. Some people are contrarian for the sake of getting headlines or outsmarting the markets. For Thiel, it's simply how he views the world. Of course, a side benefit for the natural contrarian is it frequently leads to things like headlines and money. Consider the 2000 NASDAQ crash. Thiel was one of the few who saw it coming. There's a famous story about PayPal's March 2002 venture capital round. The offer was only at $500 million or so valuation. Nearly everyone on the board and the management team balked, except Thiel, who calmly told the room that it was a bubble at its peak and the company needed to take every dime it could right now. That's how close PayPal came to being dot-com roadkill, a la Webvan or Pets.com.
Yeah, so he calls himself a libertarian, right?
He does call himself a libertarian, yes.
So he probably saw the bubble about to burst because of I mean, it was well known among libertarian circles at the time, I guess, right?
The tech bubble?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say, libertarian in the market respect, like as right. far as the Austrian way, the Austrian school of thinking about economics. Yeah, I think throughout the late 90s, they saw just capital being recklessly pumped into this dot-com boom. And just like, you know, Peter Schiff was talking about...
Oh, sure, with the housing bubble.
The housing bubble throughout the first half of the first decade of this century.
Of the aughts.
Yes, I think that he did understand, obviously, some of these ideas. But a lot of people who are venture capitalists have to understand these ideas or they're not venture capitalists.
Sure.
Regardless of... I mean, because I'm sure that Peter Thiel can call himself a libertarian, but I bet that the state has come in pretty handy somewhere along the way in him making some of his money.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I'm sure he played the system or however.
But also even getting the money. I mean, there's another.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Great entrepreneur named Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was what he was most famous for. And he, in his seminars, he actually worked with Donald Trump. They wrote a book together called Why We Want You to Be Rich a few years ago. And they were saying, oh, you know, you got to use other people's money. That's what they call it. You know, the government has all of this money that's just sitting there that they take from people. And no one responsible is watching it. And no one who understands what you want to do with it exists, you know, because they wouldn't work in government if they really understood this stuff.
You got to buy that book from the dude who wears the question mark suit or whatever.
Oh, remember that guy?
I totally went there.
He was a hysterical man.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw this. And this is not going to be a topic for discussion. There used to be this man who would have these commercials, how to get money from the government. And he would wear like a Riddler outfit, but it wasn't exactly with dollar signs.
And it wasn't Jim Carrey.
Right. Yeah. It was like the question marks were dollar signs. Yeah. So when we come back, we are going to get into this story and we want you to participate with us. 843-JOIN-SSP. This is School Sucks Live. We will be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. With me tonight is Mantrick, and we eagerly await your calls at 1-843-JOIN-SSP. You can Skype in School Sucks Live. Hey, guess what, Mandrick? The discussion that we had in the last segment allows us to skip about 8 paragraphs in this article.
That's awesome.
All the economics we talked about. We're reading an article that was a warning from Peter Thiel, written a little over a year ago, that we are in a bubble and it's not the internet. It's higher education. And his experience, his professional experience, his experience as a venture capitalist came about 12, 13 years ago when he was watching the dot-coms implode. But
and he was the founder of PayPal, right?
Yeah, he was one of the two founders of PayPal. He eventually unloaded PayPal to, it was eBay?
Yeah, in like 2002, I think.
Yeah. But Thiel's issues with education run even deeper. He thinks it's fundamentally wrong for a society to pin people's best hope for a better life on something that is, by definition, exclusionary. If Harvard were really the best education, if it makes that much of a difference, why not franchise it so more people can attend? Why not create 100 Harvard affiliates, he says. It's something about the scarcity and the status. In education, your value depends on other people failing. Whenever Darwinism is involved, it's usually a justification for doing something mean. It's a way to ignore that people are falling through the cracks because you pretend that if they could just go to Harvard, they'd be fine. Maybe that's not true.
Well, what do you think of that line? In education, your value depends on other people failing. To get into Harvard, you have to be, it's pretty exclusive, right?
What it says is that you're better than other people.
Right. By their standards.
It's like when you say, I went to Harvard to somebody, in our society today, you are saying, did you know that I am better than you?
I'm a better human being than
you. Yeah, that's basically what you're saying.
I mean, and that's how many people hear it. I wouldn't hear it that way anymore, though.
No, I definitely wouldn't hear it that way anymore.
But probably most people still do.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's just a status thing, I guess.
Yeah. That's...
But now, obviously, there's plenty of people that go to Harvard and probably are very successful in life, I'm sure.
Yeah, very, very successful. But it depends on how you define success.
Sure.
If you define personal success as meeting all of the expectations of parents whose expectations could never be met no matter what you did.
Right.
A successful legal career, a successful political career. And no. I mean, obviously, there's tons and tons and tons of fine young people who come out of Harvard and do probably wonderful and productive things with their lives. But just to use it as this exclusionary term that says, I'm better than you because I went here.
Yeah.
I think we're saying that over time, where even, you know, the most stubborn people in the world, as far as like changing their minds or recognizing the current state of affairs, I mean, they are realizing that what college could once protect from people, it can't do that anymore. There's no way. So because of the information, how freely it flows, that just doesn't have that much value anymore.
Sure, because you can find anything on the internet and learn any skill, really.
Today, someone could say, in a really snotty way to you, if these kinds of Harvard snots that we saw in like movies of the 80s,
right?
If those kinds of people still exist, today, when they say, I went to Harvard, you could say to them, well, I didn't. I went on iTunes. And I downloaded podcasts of every course that you took while you were at Harvard. You could have a real Goodwill Hunting moment with these people. Real, how about
you don't even have to be a janitor.
Them apples moment.
Right? Oh,
you could say, I got all the same information as you for free. All I had to buy was an iPod. But let's see, where did we leave off? And that ripples down to other private colleges and universities. At an event 2 weeks ago, I met Jeffrey Canada, one of the stars of the documentary Waiting for Superman. He talked about college he advises that argued they couldn't possibly cut their fees for the simple reason that people would deem them to be less prestigious. So it's essentially what we're saying.
Right.
Thiel is the first to admit that some of his promised security is true. He himself grew up in a comfortable upper middle class household and went to Stanford and Stanford Law School. He recently reaped advantages like friendship with frequent collaborators and co-investors Keith Rabio and Reid Hoffman. Today he ranks on Forbes billionaire list and has a huge house in San Francisco with a butler. How much of that was him and how much of that was Stanford? He doesn't know. No one does.
And it's certainly important. And I mean, who you know and where you came from, I guess that does give you an advantage in some ways. For sure. I mean, growing up in an alley versus growing up in a family of rich people, well-connected people, I mean.
Yeah. But I mean, who you know can be, that can be achieved through other ways as well.
Sure.
I mean, I am where I am today because of who I know.
Right.
You know, and maybe not don't know them personally or have a close personal relationship, or we don't have the same college sweater or whatever, if they still have college sweaters, but they know what I do, you know, and we might have somewhat of a rapport, and I talked about something that I needed to get done and they stepped up and helped me.
Yeah, and with the internet now, too, I mean, you could come up with something pretty neat, make a video about it or write an article, and it could explode on the internet, and you could be like that little kid in California that made an arcade out of cardboard. It blows up on the internet, and, you know, it's huge.
And he didn't know anybody.
Yeah, he didn't have connections. His dad owned some kind of, like, auto repair or sold, like, car parts or something.
Yeah, he didn't know Keith Rabois, like Peter Thiel did.
Right.
But he knew people found out who he was because it's so easy to do that today. So the whole who you know thing used to be very important in a world where these closed circles existed.
Right.
Now, where we still see circles that are so closed, yes, who you know is a very important thing. Hollywood, that's all who you know.
Yeah, of course.
Right? But outside of that, if you don't want to play that sort of mainstream sellout Hollywood kind of game, mm-hmm. you know, you can winds up with filmmaking success, you know, personal success and satisfaction with filmmaking, if that's what you want to do, with acting, if that's what you want to do, by putting yourself out there in ways that you couldn't do before.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's, it was Kane's Arcade. That's what it was.
Kane's Arcade. Yeah. Yeah. I did watch the video. It was very cool.
It was brilliant.
It had prizes too.
Yeah.
Tickets. I thought the prices were a little high for a cardboard arcade run by a 9-year-old.
Well, but clearly your opinion doesn't matter.
I know. No, it really doesn't.
You're not blown up on the internet. This kid's only 9.
This is School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. With me tonight, Mandrick. The number is 1-843. Join SSP. We would love to hear from you. You can also Skype in School Sucks Live. We're doing a fantastic show tonight. I do not know why you are not involved. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brett. With me tonight, Mandrick. And we're talking about something called the college bubble. But because of our discussion, we haven't even gotten to what that is yet. Right. And we're about to find out. Last thing we were talking about is he was saying, you know, am I successful because I was connected to people? You know, he's asking himself that question. Did I, because I go to Stanford, how many doors did that open for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
And because who I knew or whatever.
But, he argues, that doesn't mean that it's not an uncomfortable elitist dynamic that we should try to change. He compares it to a world where everyone was buying guns to stay safe. Maybe they do need them. But maybe they should also examine some of the reasons life is so dangerous. Try to solve those too. The ill solution to opening the minds of those who can't easily go to Harvard? Poke a small but solid hole in this Ivy League bubble by convincing some of the most talented kids to drop out of school and try another path. The idea of the successful dropout has been well documented in technology, entrepreneurship circles.
You know, I don't know about, it says like convince some of the most talented kids to stop, to drop out. I don't know if you necessarily have to convince them. I'd just rather just present different ideas.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I think that would be all it would take.
Right. Like, hey, you know what? You don't have to just, college isn't the only answer.
Yeah.
You know, you that doesn't mean you're going to be working in a factory for the rest of your life or something.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of them even feel like there would be a choice or an alternative.
Right.
And it's certainly been set up for them that way, and a lot of parental pressure is responsible for that. Oh,
sure. Especially, I'm sure, in wealthier families where it's like, my dad was a lawyer, and I'm a lawyer, and you're going to be a lawyer, and you know that's what they heard since they were 2 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He says that it pops a bubble to tell these kids they might have another path, and Mandrick's point was they don't need to be convinced. They maybe just need to be shown that some other option exists.
Yeah.
The idea of the successful dropout has been well documented in technology circles, but Thiel and Founders Fund managing partner Luke Nosek wanted to fund something less one-off. So they came up with the idea of the 20 Under 20 program last September, announcing it just days later at the San Francisco Disrupt. The idea was simple. Pick the best 20 kids he could find under 20 and pay them $100,000 over 2 years to leave school and start a company instead. So this is what I wanted to get to. The way this has been framed up for a lot of people, the way this has been presented is Thiel is this reckless billionaire giving kids money to draw, luring kids out of school with promises of thousands of dollars, right? Like he's standing outside the admissions office, you know? And I'm not thinking that he's any great guy or somebody who needs to be defended to the ends of the earth, but it is obviously a reductive assessment of it to say that he's, you know, standing there just handing out cash to kids like, don't do it, you know, don't do it.
And that's not really a lot of money for a company startup. I mean, I guess it depends on what you want to do.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't think that it's, anybody is a target for this either. I think sure. You have to show a certain kind of ingenuity and promise.
Right. I mean, they're not just going to grab some kid off the street who doesn't really know what he wants to do or have any idea how to run a business.
Yeah. They're not going to the English Composition 101 liberal arts majors at Hesser College.
Sure.
And do not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say stuff like that.
I think there's something wrong with it, but go ahead. No, I'm just kidding.
I just sounded like a real Harvard graduate.
We actually both did graduate from Harvard.
Sorry about that. 2 weeks ago, Thiel quietly invited 45 finalists, so there that indicates that there was a process, to San Francisco for interviews. Everyone who was invited attended, no hysterical parents in sight. Thiel and crew have started to winnow the finalists down to the final 20. They'll be announced in the next few weeks. So it shows that this is also incredibly finite. You know, we're trying something out with only, don't worry, America, with your precious bachelor's degrees. You know? Like, this is 20 people who are probably going to be okay, you know, just with what they've shown so far, probably going to be okay no matter what. While a controversial program for many in the press, plenty of students, their parents, and people in tech have been wildly supported. Thiel received more than 400 applications, and most were from very high-end schools, including about 17 applicants from Stanford, and more than 100 people in his network have signed up to be mentors to them. Thiel thinks there's a sea change in the last 3 years, as debt has mounted and the economy has faltered. This wouldn't have been feasible in 2007, he says. Parents see kids moving back home after college, and they're thinking something is not working. This was not part of the deal. We got surprisingly little pushback from parents. Thiel notes a handful of students told him that whether they were selected or not, they were leaving school to start a company. Many more built tight relationships with the competing applicants during the brief Silicon Valley retreat, a sort of support group of like-minded, restless students. So, a benefit there as well. Now, here's what my concern would be, and here's what the article is not going to tell us. Is Peter Thiel, you know, becoming some kind of cult of personality figure, right, that young people are attracted to as some kind of role model, you know?
Well, I think any public figure, people can look up to him, right? I mean,
I'm interested in who Peter Thiel is and what he wants to do. So we understand that he has presented this way over the last couple of years that I think is exciting and interesting of popping this higher education bubble.
Yeah.
But he also is part of this superclass of, you know, billionaires. And it's not, you're not bad if you're a billionaire.
Of course not. I love rich people.
But he's somebody that I believe wants to have a very real, very palpable impact on society, on Earth.
You think he wants to use force, like the government force, to do it?
I know he made some of his money through government means.
I don't see how he couldn't have.
See how you could get to be a billionaire without doing that.
Right. Because the more money you make, the more you get on the government's radar, you know, as you increase in wealth.
Oh, absolutely.
And they target people, rich people who don't pay taxes. I mean,
absolutely. And you start to get more fingers pointed at you, too. And you probably get more protective of what you have as your wealth increases. So being a billionaire doesn't obviously make you a bad person. But in our present world, I really believe that it diminishes the kind of courageous and revolutionary person that you might have been. So maybe Thiel, who the big news story recently is that he showed up at this Bilderberg meeting. He was one of the invited guests to participate in Bilderberg, which is this very real, although I'm not sure how efficacious it actually is, group of people that meet and sort of plan world domination, but talk about the world like it's their fantasy baseball team.
I think it's just they just have it just so Alex Jones can stand outside and scream at them.
Have plenty of other things for Alex Jones to do. 843, join SSP. School Sucks Live. We'll be right back.
Oh, you missed
it. I just heard the best sales.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. With me tonight, Mandrick.
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, are we doing an after show after this?
Yeah, we could do a little. Oh, man, just the two of us. It's going to be wild. If you don't know what we're talking about, you say, hey, I'm on this thing called LRN.FM. Great. I encourage you to be there. I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to check out all of the great programs that LRN.FM has. You can hear School Sucks there. You can hear a bunch of great other shows that I love, like Free Talk Live, Free Domain Radio. What are some of the ones you like?
Pork Therapy. That's
Pork
a good
Therapy.
One, right?
That's a good one.
With my friend Stephanie Murphy.
Stephanie Murphy. Yep. Who I'm sure will be sitting in one of these chairs one day doing this show, you know, when she gets a chance.
Right.
So what we've been talking about tonight is a higher education bubble coming from Peter Thiel. He was the one who introduced this idea. And before we go any further, we are going to take a caller, 306. You are on School Sucks Live. Who's this?
Whoa. Hey!
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, Thor, stop flying for a minute.
Who's this?
You might want to drop this.
This is Troy. From Freedom Engineering.
Oh, okay.
I'm live right now.
Hey,
how you doing? What can we do for you tonight? You started out, it sounded like you were in a wind tunnel there for a minute, but now you actually sound fine.
I just shut off the tractor, so.
Oh, cool.
Well, I wanted to talk about Peter Thiel.
Something's going on.
Now it's quiet.
Okay.
Now it's quiet here. So, sorry about that.
No problem.
Well, it seems to me he's kind of at the center of, like, from the outside looking in, it seems to me he's kind of at the center of a network of, you know, people that are, in my opinion, going to do the most to change the world for the better. And I think freedom's going to come through technological advances. And I've been listening to Alex Jones a few times just for entertainment. And he's going on about Peter Thiel being a technocrat.
Yeah.
I think. And it's he's really against him. And,
is that
anyway.
So technocrat's a bad thing? Is that like a bureaucrat?
A technocrat is like... I'll give an example. Somebody like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is, he was the one who wrote the Grand Chessboard about how the U.S., you know, deserves global primacy and how, the people are idiots and useless and they need to be managed. He would be in favor of technocracy, like the systems that we see developing today that can organize and control things in ways that were not possible 15 or 20 years ago.
That sounds awesome.
Not being used by the good folks, though, you know.
Right.
I think that is a concern when it comes to Thiel because, yes, I believe that he is somebody who, whether it was for his own legacy or whatever, wanted to have a very quick and significant impact on the earth. And I wonder, is it possible that somebody like that could be, you know, seduced towards a darker side, a darker way of doing things, saying, yes, you know, your idealism is adorable, but here's the way things really work. And if you want these things, here's the way it has to go.
Well, I hope not. And I was quoting Alex Jones there just as kind of a joke. Like, I don't think, well, I don't know the man, Theo. I don't know him, but I don't think he, like, I agree with him on everything. So I don't think he's coming at it from an evil perspective, or I don't think he can be, well, I don't know if he can be corrupted, but I don't think so. But I know the history of PayPal when he started it, like, it was a libertarian idea right from the start. Like, he wanted to compete with the U.S. dollar, and it was only, I guess through, you know, he didn't want to go the way of the Liberty dollar and end up in jail or anything. You know, he pivoted the business and PayPal was invented, right? So,
sure, yeah.
But yeah, I think the biggest message, just I think it is one point out, the biggest message that Theo has that I'm impressed with is the message he gives to people that is, it's up to us, basically. You know, we're always talking about they'll do this someday and they'll do that someday. Well, Greg says, you know, it's up to us to invent these things and, you know, to build the things we want to see. If we want to see flying cars, we got to build them. And that's his greatest message. And there you go.
Yeah, you know, I think that the thing that I hope, even Peter Thiel might call himself a libertarian politically, but what I hope he really understands is that the kinds of change that even if let's give Peter Thiel the benefit of the doubt. Let's say he actually wants these things. He has to understand that there has to be a major philosophical sea change before any of these things that he dreams about if he really dreams about human freedom and that's the impact that he wants to have on the world. That's a philosophic process, and that starts with the treatment of children. And Peter Thiel could have set out with the best intentions with the world in which the world in which we currently live, where he creates PayPal, you know, this exciting new interface on to exchange money online.
And it was pretty exciting. I signed up right when it came out. I remember having an account and very early on.
Yeah, and I still use it today. He, through his founders fund, almost by himself, well, with a group of investors, really, bankrolls Zuckerberg to make Facebook. And like, look, this changes the way we communicate. But PayPal and Facebook, back to technocracy, are a, you know, global controllers' dreams, you know, as far as they are probably two of the best methods in existence today for tracking people's habits and behaviors and desires online. Now, that doesn't mean, like, if I'm Alex Jones, I say, folks, you know, he set up these two things and look at what they do.
You can do a better Alex Jones than that.
I could probably if I practice. I don't want to turn this into like Brett's impression hour, but, you know, he was involved in PayPal, you know, this globalist, network of, or this control grid. I'm trying to use Alex Jones language, and Facebook, which is, you know, NSA technology, which is, I mean, I don't deny any of that. And I think that those kinds of, technologies will be and already are really being used by nefarious people for, not so good purposes. But I will give this guy the benefit of the doubt because I don't have anything hard that connects him to them. Yes, he was at Bilderberg. That is interesting to me, but I don't know what that means. I don't know why he was there. I assume that this is not all super powerful people in the world, but they look at people who are in the super class economically and they want to seduce them. My girlfriend said to me today when we were talking about this, she said, if you were invited to Bilderberg, like with your ideas, you're a libertarian, wouldn't you go? Even just to tell Mandrake?
Yeah. Well, if you were invited to be on, I don't know, some show on Fox or something, some new show, I mean, you would go, right, and talk?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. And
yeah, of course. Well, I mean, it depends on which show it was and how much I knew. If they were just going to try and, you know,
completely destroy you.
I've seen that done. So I'd have to think twice about how important the message I needed to get across was at that point. But yeah, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about Peter Thiel, but I assume that the kinds of people who are the mainstays at Bilderberg do try to seduce people who have huge amounts of money and ambition. And if that ambition is especially directed towards changing the world, what do you think of that?
Okay. I have a point about what you said a little while ago about that has to be a change in philosophy. And that's, you know, the Stefan Molyneux example. You have to raise your kids and it has to be a generational thing, the change. And I actually have a contrarian view to that.
Troy, do you want to come when we come back? Do you want to tell us about that? And maybe tell us a little bit more about what you do?
Sure. I'll wait.
Yeah. Thanks. We'll be right back. School Sucks Live. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. Today is July 5th. With me tonight is Mandrake. And on the phone, I believe our caller's name is
Troy.
Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Troy.
Now, you wanted to raise your objection to my suggestion that this was a philosophic evolution that would take a considerable amount of time.
Yeah. Hopefully my theories are right in that. And that, you know, the Stefan Molyneux position that you have to, you know, raise the next generation, which I agree with. I'm trying to raise my next generation, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be technological changes that are going to allow people to the option not to be socialists. I know, you know, you can go the agorist way and you don't have to participate in the system. and you can survive. But I think there's going to be changes. I'll try to give an example. You know, back before there was democracy, there was just cannons and kings had control. But once the firearm was invented, the individual firearm, then it was all of a sudden, oh, well, we'll give you democracy. And, you know, Bitcoin could be an example of a technological change that's going to, you know, upset the apple cart of the state. And there could be, you know, several other things coming down the pipe that do this. So,
sure.
I don't know. I just think people in society are given the option to be a socialist, so they take the easy road and they just, you know, they live off the state or they, you know, pay their, you know.
So while we're on the subject, though, when you called in, you mentioned freedom engineering. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what you do there?
Okay. Well, there hasn't been a lot happening. It's farming season up here, and I'm trying to, you know, make some money. But a lot of things I hope to get rolling in after harvest. But right now, I guess...
I was saying, you have an idea.
The project is something called Friendica, where a guy named a friend of mine, anyway, I don't know if he wants to have his name mentioned, but he's making a Friendica server for people to use that. And that's a competition with Facebook. And it just basically is a distributed, decentralized Facebook where people can hold their own profiles and stuff. So we want to start one of those just to kind of promote the non-use of Facebook, actually speaking of Peter Thiel.
That's a pretty big goal because, I mean, Google even tried it and I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Google Plus isn't going too well.
Oh, a lot of people have tried it.
Right.
The Friendica project, it's not anything to do with freedom engineering. It's an open source project that people are developing on their own, and they allow whoever wants to set up a server and do this. But yes, I realize it's huge. Even Google couldn't take on Facebook, and basically they have the juggernaut.
Yeah.
But I think there could be optional for niche markets like libertarians, of course, is one market that, you know, one could, I think, try to move the libertarians off of Facebook, just people who believe in the importance of privacy. And I think that would be a good thing.
And, you know, that's why I asked about freedom engineering, as the name implies. That's very consistent with what we're talking about tonight. So if people find this to be an interesting topic, you know, as far as how the world really, or what the conversation has become, as far as how the world really could move towards being freer, being eventually voluntary, that might be, I think to really have a foundation for that, we need what I'm talking about. But I certainly acknowledge that that is pushing things faster and faster and faster along. The only problem is, like, because of the fact that the state is going to exist, they are eventually going to come to be the beneficiaries of your PayPal or of your Facebook kind of technology. And the truth is, because they have all the money, and I know that you talked about, Troy, you talked about ways to take money away from the state through technological advancement, even though they still can get their hands on so much money that freedom-minded entrepreneurial people can't, they're probably going to have that technology first as things exist today. And that's I'm not saying that these things aren't important, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't be trying to develop these things, but the philosophical piece of this, my point was that that's very important as well.
It is very important.
And the education.
Very true.
Piece.
And I think people will be more apt to choose the correct path philosophically if they're able to survive doing it. You know what I mean?
That's the real lure back to the state, I think, for some people. Or their fear in getting away from it. Because, like, how would I survive? Yeah. What could I do? I mean, I couldn't imagine going 100% off the grid. Mandrick, the guy sitting across from me, is the only person who I know who sustains himself. I mean, I know a lot of people who are like, hey, I'm an agorist, man,
you want to buy some weed?
Yeah, or I'm an agorist and I make $400 a month and I live on somebody else's couch. But Mandrick actually sustains himself, actually has a living that comes from what he does. And I know there's other people out there who do it, and I'm sure there's other people I know who I've crossed paths with somewhere that do it. But Mandrake is the only friend that I have who is a real 100% agorist.
But I still use like PayPal. I still use. It's not like I'm completely away from the government, I guess you could say, or whatever.
Well, yeah. He drives on the road. Right, so he pays tolls. But as far as how he makes his living, and my entire job, really, like even though I've tried to move it away, basically, still, as much as I hate to say it, kind of depends on the government system existing, because I'm a problem solver for that problem. You know, I could do totally different, more innovative and exciting work.
If it wasn't there tomorrow, you'd probably figure something else out.
Yeah.
And you'd be fine, I'm sure.
And there'd probably be a huge market for my services.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be.
I don't know, but
I'm just saying, you know, that's
Troy, if there's not anything else, we'll let you go, and please give us a call in the future. It was great to hear from you.
Thanks,
and
Troy.
I appreciate your thoughts.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night.
Bye.
You know, I got a call from a friend of the show, personal friend of ours, a guy named Wes Bertrand. We're going to hear from him in the next segment. This is School Sucks Live. We still will have time for your call. If you're more of an after show type of guy or girl, don't hesitate to call us after midnight.
After show type of girl.
We'll stick around for a while and we'll talk more with you then, probably about topics less serious and educational. School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. We've got about two segments left, and we will have time for your call if you make it. This segment, I'm hanging on for a friend right now who is calling in. Mr. Wes Bertrand, you are on the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Hey,
Brett, how's it going? Hey, Mandrake.
What's up, Wes?
Good. Just in case anyone is unfamiliar, can you tell?
Everybody knows who he is. Move along. No, I'm just kidding.
Can you tell people who you are?
I'm the host of Complete Liberty Podcast, and I've been doing that for a few years. And Brett, you of course have been on my show quite a few times.
Yes,
absolutely. And me on yours.
Absolutely, yes. And Mandrake is here as well tonight, and you guys are part of one of those hangouts, right?
Yeah, we hang out on Google+. It's a nonviolent communication thing. I think
indeed, yeah, it's pretty fun doing the hangouts because you've got all those little characters. You can like put a beard on yourself and a little monocle and a pirate hat and all that stuff.
We just say we're meeting to discuss nonviolent communication, but really we just want to look like whatever the theme is around that time of the month.
Wes, are you making us out good enough to bring up the point that you wanted to share with us tonight about Peter Thiel?
Yeah, I just flipped it on. I don't know if you guys discussed some of his background in terms of, I know you mentioned PayPal, but some of his other things that he's been involved in. Did you get into some of the espionage stuff?
No, not at all.
Yeah, there was an article written for thenation.com back in February of this year, and it's a pretty scathing piece. It's titled, Ron Paul Wants to Abolish the CIA. His largest donor builds toys for it.
Yeah.
So it talks about Peter Thiel being the main funder of Ron Paul's Super PAC. And I guess these Super PACs are ways that private individuals can donate lots of money to candidates. Is that right?
Yeah. That's the way they can bundle it together. Yeah. And absolutely.
Yeah, something like $2.6 million to his Super PAC. And which is 76% of its total intake. But the Nation, of course, is kind of a liberal rag.
Yep.
As opposed to National Review, which is the conservative sort of opponent to that, I guess. But it says that Thiel is self-described libertarian and opponent of democracy. Let me give a little quote down there about that. Who made his fortune as the founder of PayPal, launched Palantir in 2004 to profit from what the Wall Street Journal described as, quote, the government spy services marketplace, unquote. The CIA's venture capital firm InQtel, you guys might have heard of that, was brought in to back up Thiel as one of Palantir's first outside investors. Today, Palantir's valuation is reported to be in the billions, with a B.
The recent Business Week profile explained how Palantir makes its money and why Ron Paul's followers should be bothered. Depending on where you fall on the spectrum between civil liberties and absolutism and Homeland Security lockdown, Palantir's technology is either creepy or heroic. Judging by the company's growth, opinion in Washington, of course, and elsewhere has veered toward the latter as heroic. Palantir has built a customer list that includes the U.S. Defense Department, CIA, FBI, Army, Marines, Air Force, the police departments of New York and Los Angeles, and a growing number of financial institutions trying to detect bank fraud.
Wes, does this...
These deals have turned the company into one of the quietest success stories in Silicon Valley. It's on track to hit $250 million in sales this year.
Wes, I know you're a big Ron Paul supporter. Does this...
Yeah, that's kind of a side note, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't dabble in politics. I believe in voluntarism, where we can achieve a society through peaceful means rather than the coercion of politics.
And that was what we were suggesting today, too, with like how much and how fast technology can change the world, towards a more voluntary society. Certainly it's possible, but the state is always going to be a real obstacle and a real anchor when we think about what could be possible. You have a whole chapter about this in your book, Wes, called Imagine a Free World, where I think it examines more like once the state is gone, where would we be? Or where would we be if the state was not here today? What kinds of things would be possible? So, yeah, I think that this whole Thiel story is very interesting because there is a lot of buzz after this whole Bilderberg appearance that he made that Ron Paul is actually a kind of controlled opposition and all of this stuff is behind him. But I haven't been able to link up anything as firm as what you just suggested there. So that's
yeah, I think it's not so much his links to Ron Paul as his links to this fascist espionage system. And, you know, it's amazing the amount of cognitive dissonance he must have when he's advocating, you know, freedom for entrepreneurial college students and all kinds of things about, you know, the Seasteading Institute. And so he's got like one foot in the freedom movement and supporting that. And then the other foot is in the complete fascist totalitarian police state stuff. So you wonder, I mean, does he have like a kill switch, you know, because he's running this organization called Palantir. When it gets so bad, is he just going to flip the switch and sort of be a saboteur?
Well, Wes,
I kind of doubt it, being that he's a billionaire, you know?
Well, maybe his only allegiance, like, oh, you know, libertarianism is cool right now, and can I make money from it? You know, that might have been it. Or or when he was a young entrepreneur, he might have said to himself, man, the state wants a lot of what I have and what I work for. And that attracted him more to libertarian ideas for a time. But his only real allegiance, and I mean, obviously I'm speculating here, but I think the path of his career provides some evidence that there's some validity to this. His only allegiance might just be to making money. Like, oh yeah, the whole freedom thing that didn't work out. So, Ron Paul's still a cool guy and I still like that message and I still think there's potential there. But the real, you know, the future is with the state. Or maybe he's just like a lot of venture capitalists do. They're just playing both sides, you know? They don't know.
Yeah, I think Ben Casey has done that in the past too, betted on the military industrial complex for making money investing in those sectors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a judgment call for every liberty lover. However, I think that, you know, Peel is pretty conflicted about this, and maybe he's got one foot in the freedom camp to kind of sort of assuage his feelings of guilt about what he's doing. Because in this piece down a few paragraphs, it says it gets worse. The technologies and know-how acquired over years of spying on suspected foreign terrorists and threats were turned to private political use against U.S. citizens. Or submittances, shall we call them? And what became known last year as the, quote, Chambergate scandal, Palantir was outed by Anonymous as the lead outfit in a private espionage consortium with security technology companies H.B. Gary and Barrico. The group spent months creating electronic dossiers on political opponents of the chamber through illicit means. According to Think Progress, Palantir may have used techniques and technologies developed under military contracts in their pro-chamber campaign. Thiel's Palantir and its two intelligence contractor partners collectively named Team Themis after the Roman goddess of law and order, proposed that to the chamber's lawyers a plan that involved illegal cyber espionage against the chamber's enemies, including targeting activists, families, and children. Among those targeted, Think Progress union leaders, Move On, Brad Freeman, and a guy who writes for antiwar.com quite a bit, Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Support for WikiLeaks reportedly rankled chamber member Bank of America. So there you have it. As far as the scoop on that, it's just, it's pretty stunning. I mean, when I read this piece, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Hey, you want to hang with us for about 10 more minutes? We got one segment left and we can talk about whatever you want.
Yeah. Let's talk about the billionaires meeting in Sun Valley next week.
All right. We will be right back. This is School Sucks Live. See you in a few. Everybody, this is School Sucks Live. Welcome back for our final segment of the night. With us on the phone is Wes Bertrand.
And Mandrick in the studio.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Mandrick, like, how you doing? I'm doing great.
That Wes, are you still there?
Yep, I can smell Mandrick's bacon from here.
Oh, yes.
That's not my bacon.
Now,
How many thousands of pounds of bacon did you sell at Pork Fest?
Thousands of pounds? We went through 180 pounds of weaved bacon, which was 320 bacon weaves, and then another 70 on top of that of just, you know, regular sliced bacon.
So what was your method of cooking this mass amounts of pork?
The bacon weaves, we cooked them ahead of time. I weaved every single one. I touched 3,200 pieces of bacon, and I have a restaurant convection oven in my home, propane, yes. An actual, like, amazingly awesome convection oven where I could do
does
eight.
Does that work as efficiently like a microwave does?
That thing is insanely efficient. Wait, microwave can't touch it. I mean, but
awesome.
My friend Jay and I, my business partner and friend, he was like, I was weaving them all and he was just throwing them in the oven, taking them out, packaging them, and we could do eight at a time. It's great. It's an amazing setup. Just, I love bacon.
What did you do with all the grease?
We saved it all, we filtered it, and we had 4.5 gallons of bacon grease that we used in our propane fryer at Pork Fest.
That is awesome.
It is the sexiest thing ever.
I don't know if listeners have heard you guys talk about this book called The Teenage Liberation Handbook by Grace Llewellyn.
Yes, we definitely.
It contains sort of like an outline of how adolescents can get involved in entrepreneurial activity, such as what Mandrick's doing.
Yeah. That is actually a great resource. We haven't talked about it on the show, I think, oh man, over a year. I actually wanted to have her as a guest.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I think it would be terrific. And one of the things that my listeners will hear coming up soon is a conversation I had at Pork Fest with a guy named Jake DeSillis, who hosts a podcast which is on LRN FM, or at least it should be. I hope it is.
It's a great show.
Yeah. Called The Voluntary Life. Yep. He and I talked about entrepreneurship versus schooling, or I guess it would be schooling versus entrepreneurship more appropriate.
Yeah. I met him at Pork Fest, had some great talks with him.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of
I recommend everyone listen to his interview with my friends, Matt and Molly Amberson, who are unschooling their two kids.
Yeah. He's done a lot of great interviews. And one of the things that is a continuing theme in his show and that he and I discussed is the importance of getting financial freedom as early as possible.
Yeah.
And especially financial freedom from parents, because once that happens, and school is a good time too to try out some of these entrepreneurial things.
Tech sector, you know, I mean, that's how Zuckerberg came to fame, basically. Made his billions now.
I was just going to say, Jake did a 3-part series on entrepreneurship that was amazing, that if you want to do something like this, I would highly recommend listening to it.
Yeah, I have a couple friends who do internet business mastery, and they help people set up websites and whatever their niche market is, whatever they want to sell, to make money, monetize that online. And the markets are going to get bigger and bigger as more and more people get online. Like Peter Diamandis was saying, that in the next decade, a billion or 2 billion people are going to become online with their smartphones.
Absolutely.
Throughout the world. So speaking of tech, I mentioned you guys, Sun Valley is just about an hour as the crow flies from where I am right now in Idaho. And they have this mogul gathering every year. I think it's every year. And it includes billionaires such as Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, two guys who have explicitly said that they don't pay enough in taxes.
Mm.
They supposedly think they should be forced to pay more rather than just voluntarily donate to government.
Yeah, there was a really sad, it was like an audio clip that circled around conservative talk for a while, where this guy from Google stands up at some Obama speech and he says, "Sir, will you please raise my taxes?" It's just,
I love being punished.
Yeah.
Please take my money.
Boy, it's hard to top that slave speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, it's unfortunate. I mean, I think that the first argument that those people must hear is like, isn't there, there's a form, you know, where I'm sure you could pay whatever you want in taxes. If you're Warren Buffett, couldn't you get in a helicopter with like suitcases filled with $100 bills and go and drop them off at the Treasury or the Congress?
I'm sure.
Couldn't
you
drop them off?
You know what they'll say, Brett, is they'll say, well, it's not just me. We need everybody to collectively give more money.
Right.
Because this reporter for the Daily Caller, Michelle Fields, she, I think it was at Pepperdine, but she ended up at the Daily Caller, and she went down to interview a bunch of these folks that are advocating for more taxes on the rich. And she had a little iPad and said, here's the form, feel free to donate. And they all declined, and they got really pissed that she was, you know, individualizing it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I started working for my dad at his restaurant when I was 12 years old, busing tables 8 hours a week. And he paid me under the table for years. I mean, I worked there for a really long time. And I still remember the first time I got a job where I had a paycheck, I remember looking at it like, why is all this money being stolen from me? Like, not stolen, I didn't think of it that way, but I was like, what? It was just like, this is BS. Like, what? I'm supposed to, I made this much, but I didn't?
That sounds insane.
And of course, you got a full accounting of where all that money went, right? And receipts and all that.
Yeah.
But that sounds pretty precocious because I remember like seeing that money being taken out of my check and, you know, being told like, well, Brett, you know, you work 20 hours a week and you make $5 an hour, so that's $100. And I guess, well, for that work, I should get used to getting $78. You know, I just thought that was the way it was.
Oh, I hated it.
It never even occurred to me to complain about it. I mean, I was an obedient youngster.
I couldn't stand it. I guess because I got spoiled, I guess you could say, by being paid under the table from such an early age.
Yeah, I never had that
experience. It's like, here's your cash. It's like, well, isn't this how it should be?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the government, people that call themselves the government, threaten businesses on a daily basis if they don't take that money out and hand it over to the IRS and so forth. I mean, look at Ed and Elaine Brown. Elaine Brown was a dentist in New Hampshire there, and she paid her employees their full pay without deducting, I believe, for many years. And now she's in a cage, maybe for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
No, she's in her 50s now.
Well, at least in the restaurant business, I don't know a single restaurant that doesn't, other than chains, maybe, that does not pay people under the table in some form or manner. Like, I've seen it plenty. Yeah. I know plenty of people. It's like they wouldn't be able to survive any other way if they weren't, you know, cooking the books somehow. Because it's a tough industry to make money
in. Even in third world countries, I mean, there's this huge, you know, sort of black market operating, you know, just in defiance of the stupid laws.
Right.
I mean, of course, every law designed by an organization that's inherently coercive called government is going to be stupid because it's not respecting individual rights, not respecting property rights.
Yeah.
So that's basically the takeaway in all that, that if businesses asserted their property rights, then this whole matrix would come apart, essentially.
So, Wes, did you have any other thoughts on the Sun Valley thing? Or at the very least, I hope you'll give all your websites. We're about to run out of time in 1 minute. So,
1 minute. Okay, so they're meeting with Zuckerberg, and Eric Schmidt is there, you know, chairman of Google, Twitter CEO Costello, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Tim Cook of Apple. And they're just all getting, including Peter Thiel, he's going to be there. But they're all getting together to sort of like figure out what's the best way to use their money and their business know-how. It says an exclusive gathering sponsored by Allen & Company Bank offers executives the opportunity to strike new deals, or in the case of Newark, New Jersey Mayor Cory Booker, the chance to reconnect with Zuckerberg, whom he met last year, and Zuckerberg donated $100 million to Newark schools. Now, what do you think if he'd have donated $100 million to School Sucks Project, Brett? What kind of influence that would have?
It's amazing how somebody could have that much success, that much wealth in one area and be so completely in the dark in another. Like to say, oh, well, this is New Jersey. They, you know, NJEA aside, they must just, there must not be shoveling enough money into these schools. That's really sad. Wes, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for joining us tonight. Your website's real quick.
Just CompleteLiberty.com. You can find everything else from there. HealthyMindFitBody.com if you're interested in health and fitness, too.
Excellent. Thank you very much for the call.
Stick around SchoolSucksProject.com/live for the after show.
And, that's it. We will be back in 5 minutes. We're going to take a quick break, and we will get right back with you as soon as we can. For Mandrick, yes. I have been Brett.
You are... I love you.
Love you, too.
I'll tell you how much I love you soon.
This is a very romantic shot of us, too, by the way, from the cam. All right, everyone, have a good night. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Take care. Hey, everybody. Before we wrap up today, of course, this show that you just heard was recorded 10 or 11 days ago. So I've had a little bit more time to think about this whole Peter Thiel story. It's Thiel. It's kind of like a combination of T and TH. You want just a little bit of spit to come out when you say it. But I've had more time to think about this and look into it a little bit more. And just to balance things out a little bit, I want to get a slightly darker perspective. You heard us rip on Alex Jones a little bit. So I wanted to see what the discussion was on this topic over at InfoWars. And I found this one story. It's a news broadcast, and I thought I would throw it in at the end of the show here. Obviously, it needs to be filtered a little bit. I think one time, with respect to John Taylor Gatto or Ayn Rand, I said there's a few bat turds in every gold mine. With InfoWars, it might be, I don't want to say it's the opposite, but, you know, you have to pan some dirty water and you will eventually find some gold. So there is some language, I think, that you need to be careful of when you listen to this, when you hear words like connections, but it's left very nebulous. It doesn't explain what those connections are, because connections can be extremely loose. Like the two people going to school together may be a meaningful connection. It might not be. If they're, you know, in some kind of secret society where they're masturbating together in coffins, that's probably a more meaningful connection than two guys who were just in the economics program at Chicago University or something. Doesn't mean their thinking might be too different. Of course, it could be very different. There's all kinds of variables that we need to consider. Two people just graduating from the same school does not automatically form a solid and meaningful connection. So they'd say confirmed connections, you know, in an InfoWars story. But we don't know what those connections are. But I think that their portrayal of how the intelligence apparatus has reached into social media, or maybe they're even asserting invented some aspects of social media. I think it's interesting. I think it's worth hearing. You can take it with a grain of salt if this is something that you're interested in. There's plenty of places where you can take a closer look, and I'll try to link some stuff in the show notes. So this is from InfoWars. This is not Alex Jones, but... it's good. It's good anyway. I enjoyed it, and I hope you find it to be a meaningful addition. You take what you can from it and leave the rest behind. More stuff coming soon. Thanks.
We see more and more a larger web of control through groups like Facebook and other big tech people. So many of them have started attending this conference, and kind of nexusing with that, we have the article today from our contributor A.M. Freyed, Liars or Genius? Gaga, Zuckerberg, and Obama groomed from childhood for their roles. And this is all on the heels of Facebook launching its IPO this week. They are estimating they're going to be valued at over $100 billion. Lady Gaga went to Geek Camp 2. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, Google's Sergey Brin are all alumni of the Center for Talented Youth at Johns Hopkins University. Similar programs also take place, such as the Duke Talent Identification Program and others. It's kind of a mix of people with gifts for mathematical, musical, technical things, and people who just have important elite family members, and how they prepare them for their role in the New World Order. In particular, this is interesting with Zuckerberg. AM Freyad writes, it's likely these are all lies of sorts. Zuckerberg is no genius mogul, and Facebook is more a U.S. intelligence asset than a functioning business. It's a simple formula. The power elite that wants to run the world has increasingly integrated a seamless network of testing throughout the web to help develop and identify top human youngsters, those who are symbolically facile, even verbally adept, without the additional burden of deep thinking. That's right. They want to control their little pet geniuses. It's a kind of organized crime approach to the cultivating of talent. After making their selections, elite handlers begin to make the pitch. The quid pro quo is surely obvious, and monarch programs and other forms of mind control are not necessary. Most, like Zuckerberg, acquiesce willingly and do whatever is required. Of course, many of these young people mature late. Mathematic capability is not the only kind of creativity they hold. This is not an issue to the top elites. They apparently wish to select for numerical facilities, music, language, math skills, because the owners of such talents are more likely to be linear in their thought rather than holistic thinkers. The idea is to present geniuses with outward dazzling skills, but little in the way of insight or determination to investigate the realities of the larger picture. And that larger picture is coming together when you begin to study who is it that attends the Bilderberg meeting. What is their agenda? What are their related agendas? What are their conflicts of interest? We're going to get into some of that today. And throughout it, they're going to be revealing just some of the technical people who've attended Bilderberg just over the past few years. Bill Gates, probably the most notable, the already most deeply steeped in evil. But others are being brought onto this platform, and what really is at Bilderberg, just the larger cartel, that's really what they are. There's the one company. They include the NSA, they include the CIA, they include all the political fronts, and they control a great deal of the industry, the technical stuff, and a whole lot more. Now, we've heard this week about how a judge refuses to reveal the ties between the NSA and Google. We're not supposed to know that they're spying on us or that they're working together or that Google was basically launched as a front for the NSA, CIA, and related interests. But that's all coming out. And you see Eric Schmidt attending annually at Bilderberg. He got confronted last year. And it's kind of funny, too. He thought that people wouldn't know how to speak English just because they were in Europe, but they did. He got shouted at. He didn't like it. They even had some of the videos pulled from YouTube of people confronting Eric Schmidt and the other Bilderberg attendees who got caught walking down the sidewalk. Very interesting. But back to Facebook, this week they're in the news, of course, because the IPO is about to happen. They're about to be declared as a $100 billion company, really topping anything Bill Gates did or any of these other newfound billionaires, because it's part of that larger myth of wealth. Those who have the wealth are supposedly in control. Therefore, they associate with the elite. Therefore, they pull the strings. Therefore, it's not surprising to find them influencing this and that in social media and online and our new reality, what's considered the mainstream culture they're always trying to sell. And so you see Eduardo Saverin wanting to leave the country, wanting to renounce his citizenship, but of course cash in on that IPO. Now, this guy Eduardo Saverin was the initial funder for Facebook when it was only tens of thousands of dollars. He was at Harvard, ran with Zuckerberg and the other founders who were all roommates there, but they didn't really like his style and they tried to push him out of the company and snag some of his different holdings, but he got it back through a lawsuit and now he has the money. But there's an interesting clip I want to play here from the movie The Social Network that'll tie us to our main focus in this piece, which is Sean Parker, the first president of Facebook, also the first launcher of Napster, which disrupted the web, and someone who looks to be an overall agent of disruption. So $1 billion, that's what's cool. When Eduardo Saverin wanted to sell off the company for a little over $1 million, people like Sean Parker convinced them to keep going forward and try to make Facebook a truly huge company. Now, the real truth is these people are just fronts for larger entities. We've seen in the past how the Rockefeller Corporation and other big entities had to break up Standard Oil, had to break up AT&T, had to break up IBM, and other true monopolies of the early part of the 20th century. They spun them, sold them, put them in side companies, but it turned out that all along, control was basically with the same important people. And you see at the same time how John D. Rockefeller was himself an icon for that robber baron wealth of the early part of the 20th century. In the 21st century, in the rise of technology and the takeover of operating systems, Bill Gates was a major icon for that. And you see how much he has pushed the New World Order agenda, himself meeting very often at Bilderberg meetings along with his father and his wife and other counterparts of Microsoft and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But now that too has to grow. Companies like Facebook have to transplant the success of Microsoft. They have to top what's already been done. So now it has to be a $100 billion company. What does that money really mean? What's it based in? It doesn't matter, but they're going to be selling these new Silicon Valley figures as our saviors, as the rightful elites to control things. And that's why you see people like Sean Parker, the founders, including Zuckerberg, of Facebook being glorified, movies made about them. Again, you just saw the clip from The Social Network where he says, a million isn't cool, a billion, that's what's cool. But actually, he said $1 billion isn't cool. Sean Parker, $1 billion isn't cool, in the Huffington Post. One of the film's sequences involves the Parker character telling the young Facebook co-founders, $1 million isn't cool, you know it's cool, $1 billion. The real-life Parker has a different take on wealth. It's not cool, he said, of $1 billion. I think being a wealthy member of the establishment is the antithesis of cool. He added, saying being a counterculture revolutionary is cool. So the extent that you're made $1 billion, you've probably become uncool. Well, Sean Parker, you've become uncool. We have you on video attending Bilderberg in 2010, giving the victory sign, so cool, like $1 billion cool. Alex found out when I was telling him about some of the research that I do every year on Bilderberg, looking up members from the attendees list, finding out what they're up to lately. And he realized he met Sean Parker just a few months ago at a party during the South by Southwest meeting, and how crazy he was, how strange, and seemed hype up on something. We don't know what was going on. He was juggling apples and talking intently in people's faces and acting real weird, and a bunch of hangers-on were gloating about his billions and how he was about to cash in for even more when the IPO of Facebook went through. And it's just all very strange, the worship around this guy who didn't like his portrayal in The Social Network as a drug-induced playboy who's kind of wielding these new technologies. And yet, when Alex met him at the party, it really seemed like maybe he did fit this kind of super egotistical character, really reveling in his connections and wealth and total trendiness. He was there at South by Southwest appearing with Al Gore, talking about how SOAP is bad and how they have to hack democracy and use social media to take over voting. And they've got all these new companies. We're about to get to that. But this guy has really made himself involved, and particularly in the Bilderberg, through his connection with Peter Thiel, who's now on the Bilderberg Steering Committee and has invited so many of the founders of Facebook and other key technology companies to that elite summit. Let's roll some of those members right now. And you see just some of the invitees from the 2011 list there in detail. Craig J. Mundy, who's the Chief Research and Strategy Officer for Microsoft. But let's go back to the where they show their names and faces, and we can talk about the gathering they brought together to discuss things like the future of privacy on the internet, the future of cybersecurity. There's Peter Thiel. He runs Clarium Capital. He was also the first founder of PayPal and their CEO, and he was the first major funder of Facebook. He provided the first $500,000 that would eventually turn Facebook into a multi-billion dollar company. Next, we have Mark Zuckerberg. He and his sister were rumored to attend the Bilderberg meeting last year in St. Moritz. We can't confirm that directly, but the New American did write on the topic and said they had a meeting basically about how they learned to love the end of privacy, to accept all the NSA backdoors to Facebook and the other super technology. And you remember, it was only in the past months where it turned out Zuckerberg had referred to the early Facebook members as dumb effers for giving all their data away. And of course, he was going to use that data. You saw people like Eric Schmidt laughing about how you shouldn't do anything on the internet you don't want to do in public, and on and on. And his sister has also made a lot of outspoken comments about what a joke privacy was. And apparently they had a big confab at Bilderberg last year over the Facebook issue in particular and the future of online privacy. And it makes a lot of sense because they had at least four or five funders or key members or founders of Facebook there. We don't know if the Zuckerberg family themselves showed up, but it would certainly fit with the other information. But we know other people showed up and were on their official list. Of course, each year there are many people not on the official list. This is Chris Hughes, a co-founder of Facebook, and he was also credited as being the kid who made Obama president. How? Through social media. And we're about to get even more into that, but he helped get the list together in a 21st century high-tech way to really connect with people who might vote for the president, who might raise money for him, or who might just spread the trendy word about him. You also saw Jeff Bezos. He's the CEO of Amazon. He was at Bilderberg last year. He's running, of course, with the Peter Thiel crowd because Peter Thiel runs Clarium Capital. He runs Sequoia Capital. They run the Founders Fund. All these are important hedge fund and other funding mechanisms that decide which projects live and which projects die, which projects are going to become a multi-billion dollar company and which projects are just going to be prototypes for someone else to take over. You really see that going on Silicon Valley now, and they make up basically about 20% of the NASDAQ index, and that means a lot of our GDP, but it's more than just dollars. It's the what is going to be the reach of social media? How impactful will they be on socially engineering society, something the elites have been working on for over 100 years. Let's go back to that list and finish off the attendees. You also saw the CEO of LinkedIn, who is also one of the Facebook founders. His name is Reid Hoffman. And then after that, you have, I think there's one other guy in there. But the point is, all these tech geeks came together at Bilderberg. The question is why. And of course, Sean Parker of Napster, the first president of Facebook, he wasn't there last year, but the past year. The point is, they're there every year. Again, Peter Thiel is on the steering committee of Bilderberg and runs a lot of the finance operations on Silicon Valley. Such an important connection there. But it gets even more interesting because Sean Parker calls himself a disruptor. Forbes has the headline, Sean Parker, Agent of Disruption. Who is he? He is basically an early teen genius who learned to hack when he was just 14, 15 some odd years old, started his own companies while he was still in high school, got around some of the high school requirements so he could start doing some of his online money making. And then in Virginia, where he went to high school at none other than Chantilly High School, right over there where the Bilderberg meeting's about to be, he won the state computer science fair for developing a web crawler and was recruited by the CIA at age 16. Sean Parker, CIA, Agent of Disruption. And so as all this stuff with privacy shapes, you've got also attendees at the Bilderberg meeting, including Christine Varney, the former Obama U.S. Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust Division, now working for the tech companies to guard privacy. You've got Google in an antitrust probe, and all this stuff is building through a crescendo while Sean Parker says it's time to disrupt the elections. He says defeating SOPA was the nerd spring, the thing him and Al Gore called for at South by Southwest and in the months previous leading up to it, using the name playing off of the Arab Spring. You've got headlines here like Votison, social voting ready to disrupt the 2012 presidential election. You've got headlines like Sean Parker, this election, social media will determine the outcome. And it all adds together. You've got Sean Parker in this article, five interesting things Sean Parker said yesterday. He says, politics, for me, is the most obvious area to be disrupted by the web. Campaigns themselves and all forms of special interest groups and PACs are driven by huge amounts of cash. If you're a PAC, you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to mobilize single-issue voters. Taking money out of politics with campaigns is possible through social media, steering the elections, of hacking the elections through social media. And they're all meeting at Bilderberg, especially last year, but in the years to come, we'll see how many of them show up this year. Now, this entity right here, Votison, it's one of their little side projects. It connects back to Peter Thiel. It connects back to Sean Parker. It connects back to Chris Hughes and, of course, other allies and, of course, many celebrities. They're all funded by the same basic groups, Clarium Capital, Sequoia, and especially the Founders Fund, which Sean Parker now heads. Chris Hughes, who's one of the key Facebook co-founders, was credited in 2008 with helping to get President Obama elected. Here's the headline right here, how Chris Hughes helped launch Facebook and the Barack Obama campaign. And it goes on about what a great supporter Obama was, he was, but especially how he used social media, and in particular the site mybarackobama.com, to connect supporters and spread support and basically get the community organizing going on. But Peter Thiel, as you know, has been reported as a major libertarian thinker and a supporter of Ron Paul. Why would someone like Peter Thiel, who goes to the Bilderberg meeting every year, back someone like Ron Paul, who wants to break down the system? Well, look at the fact that Ron Paul has the only true viral internet campaign. That's the only candidate. You don't see a viral campaign for Newt Gingrich. You don't see it for Romney. You see it to a certain extent for Obama, but a lot of that is AstroTurf. Ron Paul has the true body of supporters, and what do they want? They want that data. They want to back people like Ron Paul so they can steer the social media data. They want to run it through all their sites from LinkedIn to Facebook and on, and they want to steer it, study it, and learn how they can use it in the future to truly hack elections. We're not talking about voting machine fraud, although that's still on the table. We're talking about steering the supporters to vote for who the system wants you to vote for. Ron Paul's an experiment. They're not concerned about the candidates in this cycle in particular. They're concerned about latching on to the proper trends for the real future. And so after he did Napster, but before he got to the Facebook and cybersecurity elements, he also had the company Plaxo, which was basically a viral online address book that worked alongside of and companionship with Microsoft's Outlook. And according to what I read about it, it basically would download onto users' computers, steal their contacts, and contact all those people to try to get them to join the network. Now, this company didn't really take off, and Sean Parker got kicked out of it, but they used the basis for the technology in the future successful companies, and that's just what they do. They seed all these companies, they see what grows, and they use the lessons they learn to build the projects that actually take off. And again, they're all front men for the larger cartel system that includes the NSA mechanisms and all the rest of it. They're running things, and they're using these tech geeks as the new heroes of wealth and power for this new age.